three things. So
one is three, huh?
One, okay. It's the most important one. For Sankeka, you said that school says things exist because independent upon the way that you name them and think of them in your mind.
Right.
And if you don't think of them and name them, they don't exist outside of your mind.
There's a thing. The Tibetan word for existence is sheja. And sheja means that thing which is known. And so there's a big debate in the... You know, you get into this, if the tree falls down the forest and nobody's there to see it, then does it exist?
That was my question.
Do you need an observer?
They say, well, it's sheja. It is a sheja. Sheja is the Tibetan word for existence. It's the Buddhist word for existence. That which is perceived. Okay. And then I finally saw it in one text one day. It said, Namkengi Sheja. The Buddha sees the tree in the forest.
So it does exist. That
is known.
Even if
there's
you
always
don't,
somebody
even
around.
If you don't,
there's always someone to observe, you know.
So it does exist.
So Pluto, when Pluto, you know, something happens on Pluto, in the back of Pluto, you know, it's a Sheja. The Buddha sees it.
And then the other thing was Svatantrika said that their position wasn't completely correct because there are things which exist independent of their parts, or not dependent on their parts.
Yeah, but, yeah. No.
So
there
is
no thing. Their position...
So
he didn't
position
say their position was wrong. If you read the text carefully... in Tibetan, he uses the word kawa. He says the second position is
okay.
A little bit better than the first, is the words he uses. And then the third position, he says, is more subtle than the others.
So whereas the first position has outright flaw, an outright flaw.
It has a flaw. The second one, he doesn't say it has a flaw. He just says the third one is more subtle than that.
Okay. Then the last question was, you said we can only see emptiness in deep meditation. But I had heard that...
Directly.
I had heard that a lot of people had gained direct realization of emptiness during debate. You know,
impossible. Impossible. Your mind has to be in, and we'll get to that. It's stated in many scriptures, especially in the Abhidhamma. Your mind is on a level called mito-me, which is in the form realm. And you are not conscious of any sense objects. You can't be conscious of a sense object and see emptiness during that time. It's impossible. And you can't even have a decent desire realm meditation. You gotta have, your mind is actually in a different realm while your body is sitting here. And you're not aware of your body. Or sense organs are. You're not watching through the sense organs anymore. You couldn't be aware. If someone spoke to you at that moment, you wouldn't hear them. Your mind is not here. Yeah, he says here, the way the last group decides that something is interdependent is subtler than all the rest. So he doesn't say wrong.
Yeah. So is it correct, you know, what you said last week, the implication school, things exist because they depend upon you calling them and thinking of them as you
right.
do.
Right.
That, to me, means if you don't call them and think of them, they don't exist.
Right.
Is there some other way to say it?
No, that's okay. Yeah. You can't exist. If anything that, you know, Chandrakirti's famous line, you know, anything that didn't depend on your naming them or thinking of them a certain way, if such a thing did exist, it would be self-existent. That's what the dock would be like if it existed.
That's where I have a problem, because if I'm not thinking of it, naming on it, it still exists.
Not
because
for
Buddha,
you.
Not for me, but it does
yeah.
exist.
Oh, yeah, for the Buddha.
It's the thing that's confusing in this for me.
Yeah, yeah, for you.
For me, it doesn't exist, but it does exist.
So maybe you should say knowable rather than known.
The word is is knowable thing, but it doesn't. But it means known. The verb is the present, is the future participle. It's like knowable, but in the sense of known,
well,
which is being known.
That would cover both the Buddhist perception of it and your own. You know?
Yeah, it's possible for you to know something, and the Buddha knows something. Okay, let's go on. We're on page 65. The number looks like that. We are four lines from the bottom.
Okay.
Angwa?
Angwa.
Dendel?
Dendel.
Lua?
Lua.
Mepadang?
Mepadang.
Tomba?
Tomba.
Kelen?
Kelen.
Telwe?
Telwe.
Koa?
Koa.
Nyi?
Nyi.
Okay. Nangwa is a synonym for Kunzok Demba. Deceptive reality. Deceptive truth. Okay? Nangwa is a synonym for that. How many things in this room are Kunzok Demba? Still well. How many things in this room are deceptive reality?
Everything.
Everything. How about the emptinesses in this room?
What about it?
Are they ultimate reality? Or, like, every object in this room is deceptive reality. Every object in this room has ultimate reality as a characteristic of it. Are those ultimate realities deceptive reality?
Is the ultimate reality of each object deceptive?
Yeah.
No, it's only part of its reality.
How so? Isn't it ultimate reality? Aren't they two different things? Aren't the emptinesses of each object in this room?
But the emptiness of each object is empty itself.
So? So it's ultimate. You should have said the emptiness of each object is dependent itself.
Is dependent?
Yeah, I mean, are you perceiving the emptiness of the lamp?
Yeah.
I mean, if I ask you, this, is the lamp empty, and you say what?
Yes.
Yes? So you just perceived its emptiness, right? Not directly, of course, but with your mind, with your...
your thoughts.
Kunzok mind.
And what's the question?
At that moment, isn't that emptiness Kunzok Denpa? Aren't you misperceiving
the emptiness incorrectly as well as everything else?
Yeah.
Because it's a thing, so...
Okay. I mean...
Because you're conceiving of it, you're putting
its
name on it.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, what you're perceiving is an
Unless
image of
direction.
Emptiness.
It's not emptiness. It's perception. It's not a real...
There's a big debate amongst them. Oh. You know, ooh. Okay, anyway. Nawa means appearance. Appearances. Appearances. And it's a synonym for deceptive reality. Nangwa means appearances. Oftentimes they'll just call it Nangwa and you don't know exactly what it means, but it refers to deceptive reality. Okay? Dendel, you know. Dependent origination. The fact that things depend on other things with which they are related. And that's why it's called dependent. Actually, in Tibetan, it's a dependent relationship.
How about interdependent?
I like it.
It's the same, right?
Yeah. I try to avoid the word origination because it gives the meaning of starting, and in two of the schools, that doesn't cover enough things, right? Starting can only apply to impermanent things. Dendel. Lua mepa. Lua means tricky. Okay. Tricky or fails. Like never fails. Lua mepa means never fails. You can say never fails. The word in Tibetan lua means to cheat somebody, to trick somebody, or to fail in the sense of not work, not hold true. Never fails. Nangwa, Dendra, never fails.
Mepa means fails.
Mepa means doesn't. Lua means fail or trick. And in this case, it means fail. So what it's saying is, the appearances around us, which is another word for deceptive reality, and they are dependent, the originating, which means what? They depend on my giving them my perception of them. They never fail. They never fail. Okay. You can interpret this line to mean karma never fails. What was the first quality of karma?
It's death.
Nyepa. But some people have missed what it meant to be definite.
The seed you plant is definite to yield a similar result.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Definite doesn't mean it's certain to give a result. It means it's certain to give a similar result. Okay. So you can think of that here. Nangwa Denda Lua Mepa means karma. Karma never fails. Okay. Karma never fails. What you see around you the appearance, everything that appears around you, whether it's pleasant or painful for you, comes from your past deeds. It never fails. Never fails. And, okay, so that's like a big number one, right? There's a big number one. And, tomba. What's tomba mean?
Emptiness.
Emptiness, okay. In Sanskrit?
Shunyata.
Shunyata. Did I go through that with you guys?
No.
Nice. Okay.
You see how she pronounces it as Su.
Shu is the form and is the root in Sanskrit. And in Sanskrit, when you make a verb, a vowel stronger, it's called vrti. It changes to shal. And when it gets to Latin and the Western languages, the U changes to V. And this initial sha changes to a hard K, as in the word century and kentum. So this word comes directly from shunyata. You know, the word cavity and cave, meaning, you know, an empty place, comes from the word for emptiness. Same is true of the word, this word, guru, coming from guru, changing to growl, and then into English with a V. A heavy. Your lama is a heavy. Okay. That's so interesting. I mean, most of our language comes from Sanskrit, ultimately. It took scholars a long time to see it. Now they see it clearly.
What does dong mean?
Excuse me?
What does dong mean in the previous song?
Dong means and. So this whole first part here, starting here and ending here, is the law of karma. It's the law of appearances. Why things appear to be something. Why does the guy who's otherwise blank appear to be nasty to you at work today?
Is it correct to say deceptive reality and dependent origination don't fail? Is that the sentence? No.
Yeah, comma. John, meaning Mr. Stillwell, never fails. Okay, I mean equal, a positive. Now, tomba means emptiness. Kelen Tawa means beyond any position. Beyond any position. You can't say it is, and you can't say it's not. Someone comes up to you and says, does the dock exist? What? What's your answer? Does the self exist?
No.
Not the way you think it has.
Right, if you say no, you're in trouble. Because they'll say, well, who are you? You seem to be teaching this class. You seem to be Michael himself. And if you say, yes, the dock exists, and they say, well, then everything I thought before was right, and there's no emptiness. So it's a greased pig, right? It's a fish that's hard to catch. Right? Okay, hard to catch. So actually, there is a position. We can take a position. And it's beautiful in the book. I'll see if I can find it. Oh, this is nice. Nothing exists naturally, but that's not to say that nothing exists at all. Everything exists merely by convention, but everything exists without existing naturally. So there's two exists and two non-exists, and that's a famous line.
The Hindu were saying that the existence is Maya, is an illusion.
They exist in a sense by illusion. He appears to be angry by himself. The truth is that he is a blank, he has no nature, and I'm supplying an angry man there. In that case, in that sense, it's an illusion. That's the only sense in which it's an illusion.
The reason I can't forget then Maya or their concept of ultimate reality is referring to time. So whatever can last forever is truth.
whatever lasts only a certain amount of time is false in the sense that tomorrow will not be here.
Different Buddhist schools say similar things like that. You know, like the mind-only school has an idea similar to that. It's actually the opposite. But we'll get to that. That'll take many years. So, Tomba Kelen Tewek means, that's that second idea, emptiness. Okay? Emptiness. Those two ideas, which are what? Karma never fails. Just where all this stuff is coming from. And then Tomba, the fact that it's not there by itself. If I had collected better karma, this blank notebook, this blank blackboard would have been much nicer. Yeah.
Your anger example that you just used, person appears to be angry.
Right.
From their own side. That's what you said.
To me.
To me.
Yeah, if you say, look, Michael, where's that angry... I used to have this with Adi Lala. We used to have long discussions about this, you know. And she'd say, no, the guy at work, he really doesn't like me. He's really an angry man. And I'd say, well, where is it coming from? She'd say, well, I don't know. Maybe his wife yelled at him and he had a bad day, or he's just a bad person, or I don't know. And I'd say, no, it's coming from you. And then, yeah, the first idea is wrong.
Right. Now, but if you see somebody at work who's screaming and yelling at you, and you think that that person is angry with me from their own side, independent of
my perception and my naming him.
Right. That's incorrect.
That's incorrect.
However, if you say somebody appears to be angry on their side with me, and that's why they're waving their arms and screaming and yelling, that's a correct perception?
Yeah.
To themselves. They appear to themselves to be angry to me.
You keep asking me that, and you don't know what he sees of himself. You just can't tell. He might be a bodhisattva. You have no idea how he perceives himself. Can't
judge him. So then the only two choices would be either that person appears to themselves to be angry with me, or is wishing to put on the display of an appearance of anger to me.
That's
one of those two things.
Well, no, by the way, how does he see himself at that moment? Not as an angry man, necessarily.
I think of himself.
He might see him as a righteous man who's trying to help Tom Crowley straighten him out, you know. I've been telling this guy 100 times, I'm just trying to make him a good employee. He doesn't, maybe almost by definition, he doesn't see himself as you do. You know, he sees himself as some...
Well, sometimes they say, you make me angry. I mean, I have to
who made
the word,
angry?
You know. I mean, then I start to debate philosophy with them.
Okay, so those two concepts, okay? Those two concepts. Koa-ni, those two concepts. Those two understandings. Koa means understanding. Ni means two. Okay? Those two understandings. GC means as long as. So-so means unconnected. Unconnected. Nangwa means appears. I should say appear. Okay. Appear.
So appears, it's a verb.
Plural.
Down there appears and up there it's...
Right. Here it's a noun.
It's a noun. Appearances.
Here it's a verb, to appear.
Weird language.
It's a very good language for philosophy. It's maybe the best. I mean, if you wouldn't expect it from it's a nomad's language.
Because every word can have multiple meanings, whichever you need, depending on whatever you need.
I don't know why, because Sanskrit is precise. Sanskrit is really precise. And somehow it's
real loose here.
Somehow this is more beautiful. I don't know.
Is there a different word for true appearances?
No. True appearances?
I mean, well, in the sense that there are appearances. I mean, if you're a Buddha, for example.
Oh, no, that's a different word. Yeah, yeah. Nangyo, yeah, it's a different word. What appears to the mind of a Buddha and what appears to our minds is different. Desi Du means for that long.
For that long.
For that long. In English, you don't have to say... as long as you have this emotion, then for that long you'll be unhappy. We don't have to have the second part in English. We just say, as long as you have that emotion, you're going to be unhappy. But in Tibetan, you have to say, as long as you have that emotion for that long, you're going to be unhappy. See, in Tibetan, you have to say both. So, as long as what appeared to be unconnected? What's your guess?
As long as appearances and...
Good.
And...
Tongba. Yeah, as long as those two understandings. Karma is infallible. Karma never fails. And emptiness. Which is some kind of, I can't say it isn't, I can't say it isn't, okay? And it's, you can't blame people for thinking they're unconnected. Okay? One is a very strange thing. One is saying, I don't know if you exist or not. Okay? And the other one is, your karma is sure. If you do something good, you'll get something good. If you do something bad, you'll get something bad. It seems like those two ideas are not connected much. It seems like that. But as long as it seems like that to you,
it's the connection between them, it's interdependence, right?
No. The first one is interdependence. What's the connection between interdependence and emptiness? You can say that.
I understand the connection between interdependence and emptiness better than I understand that karma is a type of interdependence.
That's right? Not the point. Yeah, I mean, it is true, but the point is that...
But they're not equivalent.
No, not at all.
Okay.
One is negative, one is positive.
No.
There's an absence.
No. I mean between karma and interdependence.
Oh, in this case, he's using it for... What is karma? When I say karma, you should be thinking the fact that I'm forced to have these perceptions. I mean, that's what I mean when I say karma. I mean, you have to think of karma that way. The fact that you are forced to have the perceptions that paint in the empty guy. He's a blank screen, and we were calling in the other class, we said, Mr. Karma comes and turns on the projector, and your mind is this blank screen, and he's making you see these things.
But all karma...
mine is more like the projector.
All interdependence isn't karmic, is it?
No.
Right, okay, that's...
Okay, so, dadung means... I'm sorry, I missed it. I left out a letter. Dadung means still, S-T-I-L-L. Tupa means Shakyamuni, the Buddha.
It means Buddha, or does it mean
Shakyamuni? It means
Muni. Okay.
And it's plural, really. The Buddhas. Gongba, real idea, true idea. You guys know Dopa.
Realization.
Dopa means Buddha. Buddha is plural. Tongpa means to realize, understand. It's a synonym for what? Oh yeah, I got this on the final. Lam, right? Path. Okay. Three principal paths. You can say three principal realizations. That's why I can't stand when they say aspects of the path. It doesn't refer to that. It's the three principal paths. Tongpa me. Tongpa me means, me means what? What are all those M words in Tibetan? Yeah, you haven't figured it out yet. You still don't understand what the Buddha meant. You still haven't realized the ultimate thought of the Buddhas. As long as what? As long as those two understandings seem to be
separate.
Yeah, unconnected.
You still haven't realized the ultimate
thought or the true intention of the Buddha, of the Buddhas. As long as you think that the idea of karma and the idea of emptiness are somehow unconnected. If you think about karma and you lose emptiness, or if you think about emptiness and you lose karma, you still don't understand what the Buddha meant.
Is that the 10th verse?
Yeah, I think it is.
That's not what we're supposed to
know. No, it's 9.
months later,
no,
I think.
No, okay. I mean, I don't know. I thought
it's either 9 or 10.
Kind of had it memorized.
It's 11. It's number 11.
It says he sees the cause of the always.
It's number 11, page 127. So you still haven't... You still don't understand what the Buddha meant. As long as you think that karma, when you accept karma, you have to give up accepting emptiness. And when you accept emptiness, you have to give up accepting karma. This is that this lady said in the other class that she had heard some teacher say that. This means nothing, and therefore you can do what you want. That's very bad. That's poison. Everything is empty, therefore you must follow morality.
Maybe your karma caused you to say that.
No, it is. Maybe it is. Disrespecting your lama in the past, you will meet those lamas.
Morality also comes.
You will meet those
lamas. If you disrespect your lama,
yeah.
Then you'll meet
these strange lamas
who say strange things.
Who say poison. And then you do what they say and you're really in trouble.
Never.
You know?
Maybe she just misunderstood.
Michael, that's what I think.
Even that would be karma.
Sounds more probable, yes, it would be, but still.
Morality, I remember
some book
years ago, and they were talking about the man that is directed by the mass, by the society. So he has a conventional, I now use this word continuously, morality. And then the person then, after having worked on himself, through meditation or whatever, he achieved some freedom, so he developed a sort of individual morality. In that sense, he's free from the mass morality of the society. And of course it doesn't mean that he becomes immoral in terms that he becomes a murderer or anything, but he's led by his own self-discipline.
Yeah, I would say the opposite. I'd say what you're getting at is true. It's true that when you study morality, you find out that a lot of the things which are acceptable in your society are just wrong. Pornography, sex in the movies, abortion, alcohol, drugs. Those things are acceptable in our society, and they're wrong. Why are they wrong? They hurt you.
Can I ask you a question about Kalindrawe?
Yeah.
Is that often translated as beyond existing or non-existent?
Nagarjuna said something like that, but he did not mean, obviously. Obviously things do exist, because if you doubt it, I'll hit you on the head with this very simple check. And obviously they don't exist the way you thought they did, because if they do, there's no nirvana and you might as well go home now.
Right, but is that because I've read
things
that say beyond
existence and
non-existence,
yeah.
And you sort of say, wow, it sounds like such an interesting, heavy concept.
Oh, it sounds sexy,
it
right? I mean, it's nice.
Yeah.
Not really. I mean...
But that's the same one
same,
that they're referring
not
to.
Not exactly the same words,
no.
But the same concept, obviously.
But when they're saying that, which sounds like something
it's
like really high and hard
it,
to
yeah,
understand,
yeah,
and what they
is.
Really mean is that
that's
you can't say that something, you can't defend either position.
Yeah, you can't.
Okay.
If you accept things as self-existent, then you're in trouble. You can't say it exists and you can't say it doesn't. If you say they're dependent, then you can say they do exist or not. And that's what he meant by his fourfold, to exist and to not exist. They don't exist the way you thought, but of course they exist.
So another way to say this would be, see if I understand, another way to say this would be that your understanding of emptiness is dependent upon the laws of karma, your karma. So
well, what it is, it's very, very beautiful. I mean, I struggled with this for years, and finally I saw it in some books, and I finally understood it. So, big deal, I understand emptiness. How does that help me?
Yeah.
What happens to me? You know, I've asked many Buddhist teachers, you know, okay, if I understood emptiness tomorrow perfectly, what would happen to me? You know, would the dentist bill still hurt? Would my boss still seem like a nasty guy, if he is? I mean, would you know, I still enjoy movies. You know, what would life be like if I understood emptiness? What's the connection between emptiness and me reaching beyond pain? You know, what's the point? I don't understand it. And they would explain to me emptiness means, oh, John Stillwell is just atoms and you're just making him up. So I'd say, well, if I understood that perfectly, then, well, how would that help me tomorrow, you know, at work? You know, I don't want to have any more pain. I don't want to be upset anymore at work. How is that going to help me? What it means is that the guy at work who's angry with you, you take me through it. I mean, the guy at work is angry with you.
So
he starts screaming at you.
So
what should you do now that you understand emptiness?
So you should...
The first thought you should have. The very first thought in like five words.
First
remember,
thought. Remember that you created the causes for this.
Go further back. I say,
oh.
You see, you're now, you're down there
okay.
with the first group.
All right. Remember all beings as being equal. Remember
no,
him
no,
as being
no,
equal.
No. I mean first group of the emptiness positions, dependent on the
oh.
First
oh.
remember that he is
oh.
what? Empty.
He's a projection of mind.
That's the second thing. First point is he's empty.
All right.
He's not, he has no nature.
Yeah.
He's not an angry man, he's not a happy man. Uh-huh. He's nothing. He's nothing.
He's
he has
fine.
No nature. He has no nature of his own. This is going to help you at work.
It's an hallucination.
Okay. And then what do you think?
Then you think that this is my mental concept and label
yeah,
of the situation.
It's a perception. So this is the order. He's empty.
And I am through my concept.
And he's just a perception of mine. Then what next?
After he's a, after I understand he's a perception of my mind, then I choose... to not create the causes to experience this again?
I think there should be a step called, you know, what is the nature of this perception? Is it voluntary or is it forced on
it's
me?
Forced on
me.
It's involuntary.
Yeah. Can I choose at the moment? See, so many people explain emptiness, in my opinion, wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, if you understood emptiness, it would seem pleasant to you at that moment.
Oh, you have to accept, okay. the, accept the situation.
No, not even, well, in a sense. But what I mean is, the third thing is that this is not a voluntary perception. This perception is forced on me. I have no choice right now.
Yeah. So you say, okay, that's the way it is. It's happening.
He's empty. I understand he's empty. I understand his wife likes the way he looks.
No.
But he sure looks ugly to me, and I can't stop it. You know? He is, by the way, he is angry. He is ugly at that moment. Okay? So the perception is forced on me. He's empty. It's just my perception. The perception is forced on me. What happens? Yeah, by my karma. Yeah. Then what happens? Well, what do you think next? Now you're...
Then you choose to not create the cause to have that perception forced on you again in the future.
Yeah, understanding his nature, which is wisdom. Now says to you, well, okay, now you have a choice how to react to him.
Your perception is already a reaction, isn't it?
Lost then. Don't go.
Wait,
no,
so
but I have
a second reaction.
It's
there.
Not a karma yet.
Pardon me?
It's not a karma yet.
I thought you said just thinking.
The act of perceiving.
It's not a good karma or a bad karma.
It's a result.
It's not a deed.
But for me now to... Now how am I going to react? That's the big deal. That's
so perceiving him as empty does not create any kind of karma. It's only the reaction to the perception. Sorry.
In a sense. So now, what do you choose?
That's the choice.
I mean, no. If you are angry... You're just gonna. You now realize while he's screaming, you have wisdom. You have wisdom, and now wisdom says, "Look, he came from your past anger."
Respond to the virtuous.
So what are you gonna do now?
At least
be neutral. At best, be virtuous. At least, Dalai Lama always says, "If you can't help, just don't hurt people." I mean, if you can't do anything good for them, okay, but please don't hurt them. Okay, so. So that wisdom now is saying, wait. He came from... The reason you're forced to see him as angry... By the way, he's not angry. He's blind. His wife likes him. It's your past deeds. So please, don't get angry now. As he's screaming at you, please don't get angry now. Then at that moment, will he be pleasant?
No.
It takes time for the karma to kick in. Okay? It takes time. And that's the purification of your karma. And when it's complete... You won't meet him anymore. You'll never see him anymore. You'll never see an evil person.
So when you say it's your karma to experience this, would another way to say it be that you have patterned your mind to interpret this experience as unpleasant?
I know what
you
mean.
Therefore your karma is to experience it as unpleasant?
What you're talking about, and we talked about it in the other class, is a distinction between tendencies that you get in this life,
yeah.
Karmic... The word in Sanskrit is pachiti, the results of karmic cooking. Okay? The word for a karmic result in Sanskrit means something that has cooked, a wine which has mellowed over a long time, and now it's flowering, now it's coming out. Don't think of your seeing him as angry as a tendency which you have in this life because you've been lazy mentally. It's not that. It's much more. It's much more concrete than that. It's actually an event, which is flowering now that could have been planted thousands of years ago. It's not a result of your mental tendencies in this life so much.
So when I think of karma, I think of it's the way in which my mind is developed.
Yeah. If it were just a mental tendency.
Yeah.
Then you could clean it out pretty easily.
Mental,
you know,
well,
by trying to be happy all day.
Could
try, yeah, a psychiatrist thing
and
can
it
help
really
you.
Work, which
yeah,
is
which it does. Okay. Well, it works in the sense that they get $100 whether you get cured or not. Anyway.
So then you're saying your karma is more than your mental, emotional, physical predisposition
to
react
right,
in a certain way.
Right. It's a. It's much more. I'm searching for a word. It's much more
fatalistic.
Not fatalistic. It's much more revolutionary than that. It's much more, you know, universe thing than that. It's a flowering or a cooking out.
I thought you said before, though, that there are, you know, this is where I get confused, because I thought you said before that there aren't these concrete, almost karmic things floating around Pluto that you're kind of ripen upon.
Oh, no, the way they ripen is mental. It's in your mental.
But there's
some the
concrete
mind.
Thing that's planted. Yeah. Is almost
yeah, and they cook, and then they come out like a ugly, terrible flower that pops out of the ground.
So it's not really.
And it's not your just. It's not just your emotional tendencies of this life.
It's not the reaction,
makes you see
the composition of your mind right
no.
now.
No. No. If it were, you could clean it out by, you know, sessions, therapy sessions, talking, you know, trying not to see things as bad. It doesn't matter how much you try not to see things as bad, they're going to come. You know? It doesn't matter how.
There's no way of you just force it to experience it. If you think that you are, you know, dealing with that forced experience and modifying it as it happens, that's an illusion. Only that is also some sort of a mixed perception that was started a long time ago. There's no hope of dealing with it right now. The only thing you could do is deal with the future.
Right.
And then after the perception, which is forced upon you, comes the reaction to it, which there's no hope of dealing with that either, or that's free will.
That's why you're in a class.
See, the thing that seems
wisdom comes out. The debate, there's a horrible debate in the monastery. I mean, Korola told them, mebeche. You know, Korola told them, mebeche. Say, does samsara have a beginning? Yeah. Korola told them, meata. Does it have a tameta meata? Does it have an end? You say, of course it has an end, because there's wisdom. And that is a powerful antidote. Nyambutopden means it's an explosive antidote.
Which can do nothing about the perception, only the reaction to the perception, at the present moment.
Yeah.
When the Buddha said that he will lead the... I mean, there is a
but
sense...
But think of your purification. Think of your nirvana as something that you now begin to create.
Well, see, this is
by not reacting badly. And just be aware that any time you have a negative feeling, even if it's just anxiety or some kind of fears or some kind of mild upset with the rain even, that's a bad karma. You know, and it's an ignorant reaction to an angry man. You know, you can have regret, and that's a virtue. You know, to say, okay, I now understand that this guy who's been screaming at me all these years, and who's going to continue to scream at me for a while, is a result of what I did before, and I'm sorry, and I will not do it, especially with him, ever again. That sadness is a virtue. But any other kind of anger about him, or even anger about physical world, is a bad karma.
The thing that seems funky to me with this is that we're saying that we're creating, we're breaking the cycle through the wisdom by applying a mental predisposition to be wise. You know, we're saying,
right.
I'm going to train my mind to react in this way to create virtue.
Train my mind in the sit, but why? It just understands what's going on.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Isn't that neat? I mean, it's just fine. It's, now I understand what's going on.
Yeah, you have an understanding,
you know?
And so you create a mental
yeah,
predisposition.
Yeah, yeah. Before you were like, you didn't know what was going on.
But it's still a mental predisposition to behave this way to create virtue.
Yeah, and you have to pray for it to have it.
And yet the past negative karma is not from a mental predisposition, is what you're saying. It's like they're not related somehow.
The wisdom is sang chung, gong chung. Yeah. It's very flimsy, very fragile, very weak. It is only a mental disposition.
But then how is the negative karma from the past not a mental disposition?
Oh, no, the karma that you are disposed to, wisdom is.
The negative karma that's
the fact that you are receptive, so receptive to what I say tonight, that's a good karma. And that's a result of a good karma.
Yeah. I'm talking about the negative
karma. But the...
I'm saying the virtuous wisdom is a mental predisposition, yet the negative karma is not a mental predisposition.
No, it's mainly a karmic result.
The good, the positive. Yeah. Not a mental predisposition.
Your taking to what I say is a karmic result.
Rather than just a mental predisposition.
Yeah, no. It's not a result of having heard it a lot in this life. I could say it 100 times to someone else, and every time I said it, he'd say I was foolish. We invited some of our neighbors to the talk the other day, and they said, this is nice, and they left after 5 minutes because there was nothing of value there for them.
So creating a virtue is not a mental predisposition. Yeah. Applying the wisdom.
It becomes. It is both. It is both. It is a mental tendency that you are trying to make become a karma.
So wouldn't that be the same in the past? Negative karmas also?
No. The fact that you have wisdom is from karma. How you grow, how your wisdom gets stronger through the next few months and years is from education.
And how the wisdom got started. We're on a piece of dung floating around. It's like, we were forced to all this negative stuff. So wherever the wisdom got started was by sheer luck.
Well, you're one in a million, literally. One in 30 million or something.
So, Michael, the process is you're forced to have this perception, right? Most people don't realize that. They think that it's far from being forced perception. It's a reality that they're in.
The guy is really angry. And if my fellow workers could just realize it, when someone goes off to lunch with you and you say, boy, that guy looked kind of angry today, and you say, yeah, did you notice? He really is a bad guy. You like the confirmation from other people, And when your friends say, well, he doesn't look that angry to me, you get real upset.
So there's this, forced perception. Then hopefully we get ourselves to the point where we realize, rather than the reality, it is this forced perception. Now let's try to deal with the reaction to that forced perception, make it a neutral reaction.
At best. At worst.
At best, minimum. A virtuous reaction.
Or a less non-virtuous reaction.
And once we get pretty good at that, then what? I mean, now we're starting to try to generate what kind of perceptions then? Unforced perceptions, or is there such a thing as a selective perception, or even we just have to make our forced perceptions more pleasant ones? Is that it?
Virtuous.
But they'll still be forced nonetheless.
Sure. The Buddha is forced to see himself in paradise. Poor guy. His paradise is empty, and he's forced to see it the way he does.
Yeah. And there's no.
But
there's
he understands no how to make himself force himself more.
Right.
And continuing.
In the moment, while these perceptions are going on, there's absolutely no hope of the forced means, no matter how much you want, you're not going to be able to change that.
Yeah, willpower has almost nothing to do with it. Wanting, desire, please. I mean, didn't you notice your whole life? When you don't want a pain to continue, it normally does. Not wanting it to continue has no effect on its continuing or not.
So in the moment, you can have control over your response, but you won't have control over your perception.
No, and I don't claim that and don't expect it and don't quit if it doesn't happen. I'm telling you it won't.
The only way to do it is to throw the courses for better perceptions into the pipeline.
Doesn't it make sense? I mean, doesn't that correspond with what you've experienced in your life? Isn't it your experience in your life that wanting something to change from bad, wanting, wishing, what the Christians call, I prayed, it doesn't happen. And didn't you notice yet? It's not a function of your wanting it to stop. When you have a bad pain in your body, your head, or your back, You want it to stop. You pray for it to stop. You can't think about anything else, but it doesn't make it stop.
So there's not this positive energy you generate that helps it.
Get off. Come on. Give me this Zen master who says that. You know, I'm going to take a pin and stick him in the bottom, you know, and say, okay, come on. Let's see. It doesn't work. I lived with a Japanese monk. He said, my master is... He can sit in the snow and meditate, you know. He meditated for 2 days in the snow. And he said, we're going to go to the airport and meet him. And I said, wow, that's great, you know. And we went there, and off the plane comes this old guy, you know. Yeah, he's an old, decrepit man, you know. I'm sure if he sat on the snow for 10 minutes, he'd die, you know. And he died the next year, you know. And I thought, so what if he sat in the snow for 3 hours, you know. He died. He got old. No, it's not. You can't, through willpower, it just doesn't happen. You can't do it. No one's ever done it.
So how does it happen through good luck?
If you do, it's because of you.
That's good karma.
Yeah. You're forced to see yourself overcome. By the way, that's why a miracle can happen. That's why miracles, if things weren't empty, miracles couldn't happen. Because things are empty, miracles are quite plausible.
What? But are they miracles? Then?
They're not miracles. Everyone in the seeing the miracle has the karma to see the miracle, and therefore the miracle could happen. It does happen.
So it's the
will happen.
Michael, before
if the collective karma.
Yeah. And there'll be guys who say, you know, there's what's his name, Lekar. He lived with the Buddha for 12 years. I don't see anything special. I don't know what you're all so hot about. He was his servant for 12 years. He's got this glow coming out of his head. That's all I can see.
Michael.
I don't know what you He said that. It's very famous. It's a very depressing sutra to read. My Lama, he didn't want me to read it. And so I wanted to read it.
You were forced to want to read it.
Yeah, it was very depressing.
Before you said something that I didn't realize before, then our mental formation...
Oh, excuse me. One, I want to interrupt you.
Yeah.
Is there another step? After you've decided not to be angry back, at least be neutral, at least control yourself and just, you know, at best, try to fix things in a worldly way, you know, in a temporary way. But is there another step? Is there anything happens, does anything happen immediately?
I mean,
does he change immediately?
No, he'll finish yelling at you and walk away.
Yeah. But I'll tell you one thing that happens. You just missed 5 minutes of anger. You'll go home much more peaceful. Your mind will be happy. I'm talking short term. I'm talking no Buddhism, forget karma. It just happens to be a better way to act anyway. And it makes you happier. You'll see if you get good at it. And you keep missing these opportunities for anger. And you keep missing these opportunities for desire. You know, you start to eat this fudge upstairs, which I'm thinking about. And you just let it go. If you do that often enough during the day, you go home feeling quite fresh, relaxed, clean.
Not abused and beat up by anger.
Yeah. Even short term, it's a pleasant way to live. It's probably the right way to live, even if there's no nirvana or Buddhahood, it's probably still a better way to spend your day.
I think in the short term, too, then people don't respond to you being angry as much. I mean, there still may be strangers
you don't
who react
it.
That way, but yeah.
They know you're not fun.
Sometimes it makes them appear to be even angry.
No, but not normally. I'm talking about flippant non-anger. That makes people angry.
No.
If they're getting angry with you and you say, oh, yeah.
They don't know how to relate to this. You know?
But if you're just respectful and say, okay, yeah, I understand that. Maybe I did something wrong.
And it's all...
Very important in the debate. Just keep going. Okay, still well. My if you do it with a good heart and friendly, and you're just chutzpah, you know, and it should be like that. And what it means is that
of assertiveness training, right?
When you're meditating, it gets you into a state of mind where you say, I know what I know.
Imputation.
Okay,
that's all right. Whoa. That's really involved.
Can't stand that.
dog.
When an owl is sitting on a branch, a crow will never sit on the same branch. So, sometimes you win anyway. Very important in the debate. Good, it's like, what are you talking about? Yeah, good. Yeah, same thing, you can touch your top. Are you telling me there is a way to get it? You say, duh. Right, that's what I said. What do you want to do about it? Duh. Okay, sure. Okay, then show me. Show me any method to create bodhicitta. Yeah.
Can we?
Yeah, sure. There's an air conditioner under there. Everybody wants to call it.
Too chilly.
Say, Carla?
Carla.